Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, September 25th, 2018. A police crackdown in Juba leads to several arrests.
We were about to arrest them at around 5 in the morning. They exchanged fire with our people in Chirikat area, and one of them was shot in his legs and wounded. They were arrested and they confessed that they were behind the killing of the lady.
And the United States plans to cut down the number of refugees seeking asylum.
I think until 2017, the United States still resettled more people than all of the other countries in the world combined.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan police arrested six men and one woman in connection with the recent robberies in Juba town. A police spokesman says officers stormed the hideout of the criminals after a heavy exchange of gunfire early Monday. Juba residents praised the crackdown but say more action is needed to protect civilians. Manyang David Mayar reports for VOA from Juba.
Police say they had been tracking the suspect for several weeks. Last week, one woman was killed during an attack in Juba's Muniki neighborhood. Brigadier General Daniel Justin Ashur, a spokesman for the South Sudan Police Service, says several suspects were arrested in yesterday's raid.
The gang is actually composed of six people with one lady. We were about to arrest them at around 5 in the morning. They exchanged fire with our people in Chirikat area, and one of them was shot in his legs and wounded. They were arrested and they confessed that they were behind the killing of the lady as well as that boy in Mangaten area.
Justin says some of the suspects are ex-soldiers. He says the group was armed with two AK-47 rifles and one pistol, weapons that he says were used to rob Juba residents at night. Officers confiscated the guns. Justin says the men recruited a woman into their gang as a way of luring people to open their doors at night. He says the suspect will soon appear in court to answer charges of aggravated robbery and murder.
Because they have already confessed that they have done this, the case will immediately go to the court now. We are filing up the case to the court. Yes, they will be sentenced, of course, to death. Because there is killing, using of weapons.
Some Juba residents praise police for the arrest, but say they must do more to end the rampant string of robberies in Juba. Juba resident Sarah Pony says residents are afraid to go to sleep at night.
People don't feel secure. People have to say a word of prayer before they go to bed and hope that they'll wake up the next morning safe.
Juba resident KG Jennifer says violent nighttime robberies would go down if more police officers were dispatched on the streets of Juba.
I remember in 2014 we have police station in our area, and up to now they were the one who improved the security situation in our area. That area used to be very dangerous, especially for boda boda riders. The government need to put some measures in place, because security is the number one priority in a country where people move freely, you do your things without being afraid of something that can harm you maybe.
In December 2017, South Sudan installed closed-circuit television cameras to reduce crime in the capital. Justin says surveillance cameras work well, but only during daytime hours. He urges Juba residents to work with the police and report break-ins and robberies the minute they happen. According to the police, there have been over 10 robberies in Juba this year alone. For VOA News, I'm Manyang David Mayar in Juba.
The South Sudan Parliament passed the Public Procurement and Assets Disposal Bill on Monday. Officials say they hope it will prevent public funds from falling into the hands of corrupt officials. But some lawmakers say the bill fails to punish government officials who have already stolen public funds. Dimo Silva Aurelio reports for VOA from Juba.
The measures establishes a procurement regulatory body called the South Sudan Public Procurement and Disposal Authority. David Nailo Mayo, who chairs the Finance and Economic Planning Committee in the National Legislative Assembly, says once signed into law by the President, public procurements will be regulated and officials will be held accountable for diverting public funds for private use.
We have been blamed as a country to be one of the most corrupt country. And some of these, you know, in the absence of laws and rules, you know, many things can go wrong.
During the fourth reading, some lawmakers called on Anthony Lino Makana, Speaker of the National Legislative Assembly, to halt the bill's passage, arguing some lawmakers were not present. Makana said holding the bill would only give chance for corrupt officials to loot public funds.
This bill alone this year is suspended three times. This bill has been here since 2013. It is not passed. If you are really serious about tackling corruption in South Sudan, we should not delay this bill because somebody deliberately decided to absent themselves. Those who are not attended, we can hold them accountable. Even the Minister of Parliamentary Affairs is not here. The Chief Whip of the other political parties is not here, but the Chief Whip of the government is here.
The bill stipulates that anyone found guilty of colluding to engage in fraudulent or corrupt practices during public procurement exercises shall be liable to a fine of not more than $20,000 or imprisonment not exceeding 3 years or both. Any corporate body found guilty of violating the act shall pay a fine of not less than $100,000 under the bill. Some lawmakers criticized the bill because it fails to address past cases of corruption involving public procurement, including what is known as the Dora Saga nearly 10 years ago when the government paid out millions of South Sudanese pounds to procure sorghum or Dora, but none of the companies or individuals contracted delivered the Dora. Urar Uching, a lawmaker from the ruling SPLM party, argues the fines and penalties stated in the current bill will not put an end to corruption in South Sudan.
The tension of this corruption, or to reduce the number of crocodiles for a while, at least for somebody who has hidden the document, which was less than 10 million, for me, it should go up, not 20,000. And the sentence should not be 3 years. It should be as late as least for at least 5 or 6 to 10 years. Say that we rest for a while, and the resources of the public rest for a while for other functions. So I suggest that even the company may be a company that we ran away with more than 100 million, and is now fined with 100,000 only. So I was seeing that the penalties can be increased.
The Public Procurement and Asset Disposal Bill was tabled before the South Sudan National Legislative Assembly in 2013 in order to provide a legal framework and to establish the South Sudan Public Procurement and Disposal Assets Authority. Uching says the government has already lost a lot of money to corrupt officials who were never charged with a crime.
Our country resources went out in the absence of this bill. And there is a hope that if this bill is passed today, I think something will reduce itself.
Deputy Finance Minister Goch Makoch Mayol says the bill will empower Parliament to act and monitor all public procurements. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres today opened the annual General Assembly with a warning that the principle of multinational cooperation is, quote, under fire precisely when we need it most. He said there are massive threats to people and the planet, and the way forward required a collective action for the common good. But he also spoke of hopeful signs around the globe.
Just days ago, I witnessed the signing of a historic peace agreement between Ethiopia and Eritrea in Saudi Arabia. Soon after, the presidents of Djibouti and Eritrea met in Jeddah to launch a peace process. Eritrea and Somalia have established diplomatic relations. And in the same region, in the context of a summit of the Intergovernmental Authority on Development, IGAD, the two rival leaders in South Sudan have finally signed a peace agreement. I'm hopeful that these efforts will continue to be consolidated so that the people of the Horn of Africa can finally turn the page on war and conflict.
U.S. President Donald Trump was among the first speakers at the assembly today. His speech stressed U.S. sovereignty and willingness to operate outside multilateral system. President Trump says the U.S. withdrew from the U.N. Human Rights Council because it failed to enact reforms.
Our ambassador to the United Nations, Nikki Haley, laid out a clear agenda for reform, but despite reported and repeated warnings, no action at all was taken. So the United States took the only responsible course. We withdrew from the Human Rights Council, and we will not return until real reform is enacted.
Trump also said the U.S. withdrew from the International Criminal Court because it should not have sovereignty over the United States. He also said the U.S. is moving forward and is not going to give foreign aid to those who don't respect the United States. Other speakers scheduled to speak at the U.N. include the leaders of Malawi, Mozambique, and Gambia. Tomorrow's leaders will be South Africa, Liberia, Malawi, and Zimbabwe, among other speakers. The United States cut the number of refugees it will admit in the next fiscal year to 30,000, down from the current 45,000. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said the new cuts should be considered in the context of many other forms of protection offered by the United States. But Adoy Akwe, Amnesty International's Deputy Director of Advocacy and Government Relations, argues the policy impacts every refugee in need and worries about the consequences on the people seeking safety.
It really, I think, was fairly much an effort to try to gut the whole role that the United States has played as a safe haven for people fleeing persecution and danger.
Speaking about the role of the U.S., how does the U.S. compare to other countries in resettlement programs and overall assistance?
In terms of the numbers, I think until 2017, the United States still resettled more people than all of the other countries in the world combined. And that was in a survey done by the Pew Foundation in 2017. That was until last year. Now the United States doesn't resettle all of the rest of the global community combined. But in a per capita comparison, the United States is far behind countries like Jordan, like Kenya, like Tanzania, who are hosting hundreds of thousands of refugees, well beyond their GNP and per capita. So this cut is very, very damaging, and it further reduces the U.S. credibility to say other countries should receive more and resettle more people. In terms of the funding, the United States, the Trump administration, as you know, for 2 years has tried to gut what we call the international affairs budget, which has included funding for different refugee accounts, the PRN Bureau and other agencies that really work to support refugees around the world. So it's been a double hit in terms of both cutting funding for countries that are taking on this extra additional challenge of hosting refugee populations, while also further limiting the ability of the numbers of people who are going to be let into the United States. So it's not a very pretty picture when compared to other countries at the moment.
Amnesty International wrote about the case of Awad, who is described as a Sudanese human rights defender. And Amnesty goes on to write that she was detained in Sudan due to her human rights work. And her case remains in processing. What does the news mean for Awad and others like her in sub-Saharan Africa?
In Awad's case, it really does place her in danger. She has been a refugee now in Cairo since 2013. She has applied and was granted asylum here in the United States, and then the presidential directive around the Muslim ban was imposed. And she's now in limbo. She is just one of thousands of people who were in the process, who had been vetted both by the United Nations as well as by U.S. immigration officials, and had been cleared, to sort of be moved to the United States to get out of danger. And now they're stuck there in different countries where they may be at risk, where they may be, challenges in terms of the supplies that they're receiving for food or health care. It's almost as if these people are now stuck in a limbo because there's such a backlog of cases that, and there's also this reduction in terms in the numbers of people that are going to be let into the United States, that people with a really grave risk of danger are now going to be delayed even further.
That was Adotai Akwe, Amnesty International's Deputy Director for Advocacy and Government Relations, speaking to my colleague Ayen Bior from Washington. This year's winner of the UN Refugee Agency's prestigious Nansen Award is Dr. Ivan Atari Ada. The South Sudanese surgeon is being honored for 2 decades of life-saving medical work on behalf of thousands of refugees and internally displaced persons. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from UNHCR headquarters in Geneva.
Evan Atta Ada gave up a relatively comfortable life as a surgeon in Egypt to dedicate the past 20 years to helping thousands of people victimized by war and persecution in Sudan and South Sudan. His services have never been more in demand, as South Sudan's civil war, which is in its fifth year, has forced nearly 4.4 million people to flee their homes as refugees or internally displaced. He runs the only functional hospital in northeastern South Sudan, serving Bunj, a town of more than 200,000 people. Attar says he treats everyone, regardless of who they are. He adds he is most happy when his work has saved somebody from suffering or has saved his life. UNHCR spokesman Baba Balosh tells VOA that Atta's hospital is surrounded by an active conflict zone. He says the doctor works under very difficult and dangerous conditions, providing medical services to a desperate population.
The only line of defense he has is his reputation and his humanitarian work. Luckily, so far, his work has been respected by all sides. His clinic is open for all sides, whoever needs his assistance.
According to Balosh, Attar's team carries out an average of 58 operations per week in difficult conditions with limited supplies and equipment. He says the doctor is on call at all hours and is known to sleep only 1 hour a day on occasion. He says Attar's personal sacrifice to his mission is huge. He says the South Sudanese surgeon lives in a canvas tent near the hospital and visits his family in Nairobi, Kenya, 3 times a year. The Nansen Award is named after Norwegian explorer, scientist, diplomat, humanitarian, and Nobel Peace Laureate Fridtjof Nansen. It recognizes individuals who go beyond the call of duty in pursuit of humanitarian work. The award includes a commemorative medal and a $150,000 prize. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we take a look at Ebola crisis in the Democratic Republic of Congo. That story is coming up next.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
are you more of a leader or a follower?
I would say I'm more of a leader, because in most places I find myself as a team leader. I inspire people through what I do.
I'm more of a follower, but sometimes I act as a leader.
In this question, I am a follower, because I don't like to be like a leader in a specific group. I just want to be to bring my level down, to be with everyone.
I'm both. I'm a leader, but in order to be a good leader, you have to follow first. Because we don't all start out as leaders. So I start out following a leader, and I have to respect that leader. Because one day when I become a leader, that you also have to make people follow you. So you have to respect other people's leadership.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America, and welcome to our Tuesday health segment. Today we are looking at the Ebola crisis in the Democratic Republic of Congo. The World Health Organization warns the Ebola outbreak in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo is spreading to new parts of the conflict-ridden North Kivu province, including areas that border Uganda and Rwanda. Lisa Schlein has more from Geneva.
Attacks by armed opposition groups in North Kivu have increased in severity and frequency in recent weeks. The most recent attack on September 22nd in the city of Beni reportedly killed at least 21 people, including 17 civilians. The World Health Organization sees this attack as especially serious, as Beni is the site for the entire anti-Ebola operation. WHO Health Emergencies Program Chief Peter Salama says increasing insecurity and community mistrust are hurting efforts to prevent the deadly Ebola virus from spreading. He fears the combination of these and other factors could create ideal conditions for an epidemic.
A perfect storm of active conflict limiting our ability to access civilians, distrust by segments of the community already traumatized by decades of conflict and of murder, driven by a fear of a terrifying disease, but also exploited and manipulated by local politicians prior to an election.
North Kivu is an opposition stronghold. Salama says he's very concerned that politicians are using Ebola as a political tool before Congo's December 23rd presidential elections. He says he sees armed opposition groups trying to blame the authorities for the outbreak. WHO reports the number of confirmed and probable cases of Ebola in this outbreak stands at 150, including 100 deaths. Salama says progress that was being made in protecting people against the virus through vaccinations and several experimental drugs is in jeopardy. The Ebola outbreak in North Kivu is the 10th in the DRC since 1976. Salama says this outbreak is the most difficult. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Nigerian refugee children have returned to school on Cameroon's northern border as the threat of attacks from Boko Haram Islamist militants has reduced. But as Mukiedwin Kinzeka reports from Minawo refugee camp, some feel it's still not safe enough to return home.
On a bright Monday morning at the government primary school in the Minawawo refugee camp, thousands of children gather for their morning assembly. They pray and listen to news about their school, the camp, their host country Cameroon, and their country of origin Nigeria. They are among some 75,000 Nigerians, most of them women and children, who fled Boko Haram Islamists to live along Cameroon's northern border. But even inside the refugee camp, the fear of Boko Haram attacks kept school enrollment last year to around 10,000 children. Many students were too traumatized to study, while security forces also worried the militants could infiltrate the schools. In the last year, Boko Haram attacks have drastically reduced. And since the school year began on September 3, the children at the camp's school has nearly doubled to 20,000. Teacher Lawrence Nyamjo says with only 190 teachers, they are now more concerned about resources than suicide bombers.
Problem of teachers, infrastructure, even school kits for children since they ran down by the ICRA provide everything for them.
Nyamjo says they are waiting for the United Nations Refugee Agency to help provide school supplies. The United Nations Children's Fund representative in Cameroon, Jacques Bower, visited the refugee camp schools along with the Korean ambassador. He says they noticed a positive change in the children.
4 months before, I was in the same place. These children were sad, traumatized. What we have witnessed with Her Excellency, the ambassador of Korea, it smiles on their faces. Children 4 months ago were drawing people with weapons on drawings. Now they are drawing flowers, houses. So for us, it's important on the psychological aspect that this change occur.
The Boko Haram conflict has displaced about 200,000 people in northern Cameroon. But while there has been no major Boko Haram attack in the past year, only about 8,000 Nigerian refugees have felt safe enough to return home. 11-year-old Nigerian student Emma Hamadu fled from the Nigerian town of Banki 3 years ago after Boko Haram fighters torched the houses, markets, and schools. She says when it is safe, she dreams of returning to her country to teach friends that Boko Haram's opposition to Western education is wrong.
I am in group 5. I come here for learning. When I finish my school, I want to be a teacher.
Cameroon on September 3rd reopened 40 schools on its northern border with Nigeria that were sealed for 4 years because of Boko Haram threats. While the Central African state says the Islamist threat has drastically reduced, it warns people should remain vigilant and report any suspects. Moki Edwin Kinzika for VOA News. Minawau, Northern Cameroon.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. Juba police arrested 6 men and a woman after a string of nighttime robberies in the capital. Officers raided a suspected ringleader's hideout after a heavy exchange of gunfire early Monday. Juba residents praised the crackdown but say more action is needed. The South Sudan Parliament passed the Public Procurement and Assets Disposal Bill yesterday. Officials say they hope it will prevent public funds from falling into the hands of corrupt officials, but some lawmakers say the bill fails to punish officials who've already stolen public funds. And finally, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres today opened the annual General Assembly with a warning that the principle of multinational cooperation is under fire precisely when we need it most. U.S. President Donald Trump in his UN speech stressed the U.S. sovereignty and willingness to operate outside a multilateral system. And that's a look at today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
That's our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with the song "Anna Guide" by Crazy Fox.
Me can't be a refugee in my own country.
I'm a mashi, I'm a man, I'm a big people, I'm a guy. Salaji no tala, suppose in a fox and a guy. I'm a mashi, I'm a man, I'm a big people, I'm a guy. Salaji no tala, suppose in a fox and a guy.
I'm a asma gali, set a dollar because it's a battalion.
We have been listening to Crazy Fox with the song "Anna Guide." I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Me no have no safe place to run. One man fox no have no place to go on. Me a fit I pan, you know what I want. If surely you do fear, fit I fit me land. Me shut up, could I fill up a man like a fan. Someone please come, give me a helping hand. If surely this trouble could I get me by me, yeah.